Vardian, get in. Close the door.
Sure. Hey, Dylan. You've been busy up here.
Yeah, this is what work looks like. I've been trying to figure out a solution on the monster ecology problem. I need a couple of sigils in the right spots.
Dylan, are you sure about this?
I wasn't entirely convinced magic existed until last week, Aram. I'm not certain about anything.
I assume this is one of those things you weren't quite sure about?
I mean, I could probably get better materials for this if we had more funding.
Well, for $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they are released. For $5, you'll get those ad-free episodes early, along with audio DM notes featuring Dylan and I recapping what went into producing each one.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DM's notes, along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels also get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we've got left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 Patreon tiers are available with 7-day trials for new subscribers, so head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want a free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
My name is Aram, and my pronouns are he, him. I'm the writer and producer of the Dungeons & Dragons podcast, God's Fall.
My name is Dylan. My pronouns are he, they, and I'm a physicist from Canada.
Welcome to Kill Every Monster. In this episode, we are featuring the genie.
Monster Manual describes genies as rare elemental creatures out of story and legend. Only a few can be found on the material plane. The rest reside on elemental planes where they rule from lavish palaces.
We are joined by Nordin Ali Kadir. Nordin, whose pronouns are he, him, is based out of Toronto and is a prolific tabletop game writer, performer, and consultant. You may have read his words in Yang Shi, Blood on the Banquet Hall, Mnemonic, A Weaver's Almanac, and the upcoming Intro to the Motherlands. You may have seen him in actual play productions like Gidea, The Atomless, My First Dungeons Wild Sea, and many, many more. Find him online at Werewolf Feels, because yes, he is an actual werewolf. Welcome to the show, Nordin.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's an interesting topic with which we find ourselves facing. Before we begin, we probably should discuss that this episode is going to be about the 18th century French translation of the word genie, not the earlier adoption of the word genie, which from French just means protective spirit and has never been used since.
Feel like wizards could have done less damage if they'd gone with the...
Sure could have.
Yeah, but how many people use the word genie to mean a French protective spirit? Not many.
No one.
Genies pop out of the lamp. Bonjour.
I'm not saying that's the way to fix them.
I am.
Oh, you have 3 wishes.
Oh dear, here we go.
I hope your first 2 wishes are baguettes and wine, because that's what you're fucking getting.
The etymology of the word genie in and of itself is a whole thing, right? You start off with the translation of the word genie It comes from the word genius, really, from Latin. That became English, genius, and then French, génie. And then génie sounds similar to genie, which is the singular form of the djinn. And then they became the same thing.
Huh.
The French version of this, is that attached to like the idea like the genius loci or something? Are those...
I believe so, yeah.
Those must be overlapping ideas then.
The French were the first people to translate, you know, the 1001 Arabian Nights. They saw the word djinni in there, and that became djinni. And since then, we now refer to the djinn and all the various subsets as genies. I don't know if I love it, but it is the history. And I think it's one of the most intriguing things that two things got completely conflated. So what are genies or the djinn in the greater sense? They come from before the times of Islam, and they're derived from Semitic roots, specifically the Semitic language that has the word John in there, that became the djinn. And they are related to practically every single proto-Islamic belief because all of them got collated together and turned into the djinn and had false beliefs attached to them. And I'm not saying that's a good thing, but it is what happened. Therein, they appear in the Quran. And that's when the modern sense of the djinni starts coming about. In the Quran, they are beings created of smokeless fire in the way that humans are created of earth. And they have the same capabilities as humans in terms of mental ability. So angels are a purely good thing. We can all agree on that if you're Muslim. With some other religions, it's not the case. But for Muslims, angels are like made of spiritual light. They are always good. They have no capability to do anything else but good. The djinn are not bad. They have free will. So some of them are great people, some of them are super evil, some of them are anything in between. Islam is built up of several cultures that believe in it, which means that what this very vague sort of thing has turned into since then has been everything from an association with devils and devilry to, you know, people. Just people.
Yeah. Just fellas.
Yeah.
Just guys.
Just a little guy. That's what the djinn are. Just a little guy.
Well, he's got to be. He has to live in the lamp. He's got to be a little guy.
Oh, my God. The other important things to remember is that they are often considered to be shapeshifters, and they are often invisible. Since anything can be called a djinn if you think hard enough, especially if you live in Islamic culture, everything else under the sun can also be a power of the djinn. Such as possessing people, haunting people, making people, you know, think that you're someone else, and on and on and on. What they are everything that human beings don't understand. That's what the djinn are to people. In other words, a huge variety of things that's very hard to narrow down. But at the core of it, beings of smokeless fire. For me, it's a bit of a different question. For me, I believe that, you know, as the Quran says, they came first. I believe a lot of things are falsely ascribed to be djinn, when in reality they're probably pagan gods or just notable people in proto-Islamic history. And also, I believe that if they exist, and I'm the kind of person where I don't care if they exist or not, I care about treating them as if they do. If they do exist, then they came here first. They're here first, and the Quran agrees with that. Which means that we should treat them with some form of respect. Right now I'm on a podcast called The Atomless, where I play an Ifrit, which is a half Ifriti, half human in the Starfinder sense, but in my sense is just an Ifrit, just a djinn. I basically create a whole history for them that's related to the one that we talk about in Islam, but also is their own thing. I treat them like a people. Azam is just a lava being. They do everything that a lava being would do. Once we looked at the whole lineup of the podcast, one of us had to be a human, but with facial makeup, because that's how science fiction works. One's like a CGI character, one's a puppet, and then one's just a person with a lot of makeup and prosthetics on. That's what Azam is. He's very close to humans, just with a lot of prosthetics and makeup on. I love the fact that they're part of my history and my lore. I also love the fact that they're one of the things that can really be anything that you want them to, because of their variety, because of who they are and who they have been. I do mourn the fact that nowadays we talk about them through a very Western lens, and that comes with it all sorts of problems.
Let's talk about the very specific one, which is genies in 5th edition. They took the phrase beings of smokeless fire and decided, and also the water ones, also the earth ones, also the wind ones,
mm-hmm.
also the slaves.
To be fair, that's not all they were. In previous editions, you also have the Jan, which is the same word, which don't have an element assigned to them. You have the Khayal, which are shadow jinn. If you're wondering where that comes from, the Arabic word, well, one of the many Arabic words for kind of shadowy things are Khayal. So much so that that word pops up when talking about the Lysandre in Vampire the Masquerade. And then you have the Qureshi, which are ice cold jinn. And all together, these form the various genies that have been in Dungeons & Dragons since, I think, 2nd edition. They've been there a long time.
When you talk about something to be found in a treasure hoard come up with in a fucking basement in Wisconsin, some nerd who's spent too much time at the library, you're gonna get the lamp.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you're gonna pick out the thing about genies that random white guy number 347 knows about, it's gonna be lamp wishes.
It's definitely one of the most common understandings of how a genie works, especially in the Western sense. A big blue guy pops out of a lamp, talks to you, gives you some wishes, eventually goes back into the lamp. And because of that, the genies are in this inherent circle of servitude. They go back into a lamp to get picked up by the next person who uses them again, and then they go back into the lamp, right? Even in Aladdin, when Jafar becomes an all-powerful genie, what does he do? He goes into another lamp.
Living space.
It's also not a thing. I mean, okay, using jinn for their powers is a real life thing in proto-Islam and in Islam. They used to call them shayir or shayr, and nowadays one of the words for poet in like Urdu is shayr. You could, as a mortal, get inspired by the jinn. And if you are a special kind of mortal, perhaps they would grant you a power or two alongside. As the Muslim world became more and more afraid of wizardry, of magic, this was attributed to dark magic. That's a consensual relationship. There's also a non-consensual relationship where you take the power inherent to the jinn and then use it. It's the lamp analogy. You lock them up in something and you become all powerful as a result. That's the version that ends up, you know, through 1001 Tales, integrating itself into Western culture. And it's probably the worst version, because if you think about it, that means the most powerful a genie can be, the one they can cast the wish spell, the most powerful spell in Dungeons & Dragons that's not Fireball, it's exclusively for other people. In fact, the book says this in the Monster Manual, where if, you know, some genies can give wishes if it's for someone else, and they can use wish on their behalf. They have access to the wish spell, but for someone else. It kind of suggests that their natural place is a form of servitude, and the lore responds to this by naturally making them enslave others. The kind of slavery they're talking about, it's very Western. It's also a form of projection. Like, everything they talk about, you know, the genies doing to humans, to elves in Faerun, tend to come from, like, white people doing it to other people and saying, the genies do this. You look at it, the whole list, it can be ascribed to a lot of, you know, white imperialism. Like, I don't care about the four elements thing or the 5 to 6 elements thing, if you want to include earlier editions. I think that's a fun take. I think you can do that. I don't hate it, especially if, like, an Arab or Muslim writer is the one with the hands on the reins. What I don't like is a lot of the lore, how it attributes genies as a whole to evil, as, you know, whole races, or, you know, sometimes neutral, with the exception of the air genies based upon Robin Williams's genie, that are good, but also in a natural state of perpetual servitude. All the lore kind of sucks.
It does, because you have the...
It does.
You have the awful savage ones.
Mm-hmm.
You have the greedy, you know, the Tao are weird in that they
sprinkle ground gemstones on their meals, shit like that. Like that kind of obnoxious wealthy. Your Marid are your standard, like, egotistical hierarchs. The moment you look at them, you see merchant.
Mm-hmm.
Even the good genie, they're described as airy aesthetes. Like, they're just, they love lounging and beauty and, but not in like a we produce art sense, in a I should have luxury sort of way.
They're all related to a facet of Orientalism. The Ifrit are the war-hungry and bloodthirsty Arab Muslim people. The Marid are, you know, the Arab Muslim merchants who come delivering goods, but you can never trust them. The Dao are, you know, the most common relation now are oil barons, but this was thought of Arab people way back when too. They're greedy earth genies. Of course they, in the modern day, they would be oil barons, right?
Right, right.
And the Jinn are the acceptable Arab, but one who's been seen through a lens of Western society. They're there to serve the Western people. And they're still also bad enough that if you let them to their own devices, they would just start being greedy like the rest, right? It's every single one of them, which is depressing if you think about it.
It really is, especially because, like, when you talked about this idea that they can't grant their own wish, that on itself isn't bad, that it only mm-hmm. can be granted to other people, but it makes for a much more interesting story to be like, you have to convince the genie, you have to show them you're worthy, you have to find a commonality in order to rally them on to your cause to grant you this wish. Like, it should be a quest instead of just like, I found a lamp. Now you get three wishes. Like, it just, that seems so much smaller.
Dungeons and Dragons does this thing where it states that how genies form, they cannot have offspring. How genies form is that a mortal soul, you know, finds itself surrounded by elements and forming together. In rare circumstances, you can form, you know, a genie. And then they have no connection to that mortal soul, which is the cutest way of saying these creatures are all but soulless. They've got one, they just don't talk to it much.
A genie is born when the soul of a sentient living creature melds with the primordial matter of an elemental plane. Only under rare circumstances does such an elemental-infused soul coalesce into a manifest form and create a genie. Genie usually retains no connection to the soul that gave it form. When I read that, I was imagining it more as like, this is something that can be a forced process and that destroys the input individual. Not that it necessarily loses the soul or loses connection to it, but you could take my soul and use it as fodder to make a genie, and that genie wouldn't be me in any fucking way.
Yeah, according to the Monster Manual, it would be probably humanoid like you and, you know, male. Or male-ish, like you. And it might have similarities in some or two key personality traits. But primarily, it does involve a disconnection. This is not a rebirth, right? This is not, like, starting over from the slate. This is... You inspired it. You gave it...
The soul is the fuel to power it.
Yeah.
But afterward, there's nothing much left of it. It's locked away in a little box somewhere else. And I don't... like this for a couple reasons. The sort of giving a soul to create a genie suggests that the only way these things manifest is through the death of something else, which is tough. And kind of goes against the Islamic belief that they came first in a very harsh way. But also, it does this thing where it states that they themselves have no control over their own existence. They are created by something giving itself up. They have no connection to that creation once they have been created. I also forgot to mention the rarest type of genie. Under patrons for a warlock they could have, you've made a pact with one of the rarest kinds of genie, a noble genie. Ouch.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
You found one of the brown ones you can talk to.
Oh, that's,
wow.
Yeah, that's basically what they're saying.
And that sucks because there's so much cool things about the Jinn and thus the genie, right? The fact that they are a creature that constantly interacts with humanity. The fact that they can cohabitate with humanity. The fact that most of the stories that we have in the world, you know, can relate to the jinn if you think hard enough about them, or they're seen through a certain lens, right? A lot of Muslims don't even believe in ghosts. What they believe is that the jinn haunt them, taking the face of their loved ones through shape-shifting abilities, or demanding that they have access to a home that the mortal family who wandered in did not realize belonged to someone else. There's even a little story where if, I actually learned this as a kid, if you don't want a genie to inhabit your house, you light a little candle on your front porch, you light a little candle inside, indicating that there's people still in there, you leave a light on, and thus, the jinn as a whole will say, oh, that's taken, and then won't show up.
Huh.
Yeah.
Instead of kicking them out, you're like, hey, this does belong to someone. Please respect it. And they're like, okay, sure.
It's like a vacancy sign. Like, sorry, no vacancy.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks.
Just for the record, if any jinn want to hang out in my apartment, it's cool, but you do have to split rent. Are genies monsters?
What is a monster? I myself have been called a monster on more than one occasion for virtue of existing, because a monster in a very grand sense is a creature that is non-human, that is depicted as dangerous and aggressive, that causes terror and fear in humans. A Muslim does that if you don't humanize them. And a lot of people don't humanize me. There's a reason why I call myself werewolf on the internet, or werewolf feels. It's because I'm inherently monstrous by nature of my existence. So from that aspect, yeah, the jinn, the genies, they're all monsters. The way wizards have written them, as many of them being directly evil, or at the very least chaotic, yeah, they're monsters. But that would take a lot of people and put them in the monstrous category as well. So my response is, it really depends upon your definition of monster. If I consider myself a monster by virtue of my existence, then they are a monster right along with me. If I do not consider myself a monster, they are not. They are monstrous people, and they exist in the balance between.
We can't categorize monsters on their own. It has to be through the lens of someone else's viewpoint.
I think so inherently. Just like the vampire considers himself to be a monster. The thing about monsterhood is that monstrousness is determined by whoever the majority is. And in D&D, that's a very specific majority. But if it were a different majority, different things would be declared monstrous. I love the term monstrous because what it means is that you don't understand me and you refuse to. From my perspective, if I am a monster, that means to be a person is to be the villain. And I'm good with that. Here in the West, what determines a monster is determined by a lot of, like, Christian belief and a lot of secularism and a lot of, if we're being honest, you know, racism and homophobia. But over in the Middle East, right, the answer is different of who's declaring what a monster, which is how the jinn became this all-consuming thing to begin with, because anything you don't understand can be labeled one. Over in, you know, East Asia, who declares what a monster, again, is different. The truth of the matter is, are the genies a monster? Yeah, because in a way, we're all fucking monsters. And who doesn't love that?
That's a great answer. So, Norden, following up on that, how would you change the genie in Dungeons & Dragons?
First thing I would do is just make them not be monsters anymore. And it may be toss them into a playable species for Dungeons & Dragons. Knock down their powers a little bit and make them playable instead of Ganassi, and, you know, use the new variant mixed heritage rules for them because they're offspring of a genie and a human. There, they would have to play with each other because now they're, to use D&D terms, a race with several subraces. And they play with everything else, and therefore they get used more often and more interestingly. They are now their own cultures instead of a thing that maybe you interact with unless it gets too hard. Because think about it. Sure, you visit the Infernal Planes once in a while in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. How many times have you gone to the Elemental Plane of Air?
Never.
Count them. Exactly.
Yeah.
No one wants to do that.
No, no one doesn't want to do that. It's like everything's air here.
It's the most boring plane.
Yeah.
Exactly. Why have a
second most boring plane? Dirt's the most boring plane.
genies can have sex with mortals and assumedly create offspring. Is that how we get the air Gensai and the earth Gensai? Yeah. Is that the origin of them?
So it is a genie with a stronger connection to its mortal soul might choose to sire a child with a mortal, although such offspring are rare.
Yep.
It's that whole thing of it loses its connection to the soul is literally so dehumanizing that it actually turns them into the incapable of reproduction. The only time a genie can fuck is if it's sufficiently human, which means it's connected to something that isn't a genie.
It's really disturbing. This is, the more you deep dive into it, the more there is a direct effort here to de-sapient these creatures. They're more like an ideal, a terrible ideal, but a series of ideals rather than people. And that's the thing, especially when they're taken from Arab history and Arab mythology and Orientalism. That's the thing that really makes them so offensive. This would be fine if you're talking about, you know, a fire-breathing chicken. But these stories belong to actual people. These stories, you know, are believed by actual people. The jinn exist to people. If everything Arab is ascribed to the genies, and the genies are so dehumanized, the real-life Arabs are going to get dehumanized. And to be fair, this is not new. Arabs have been dehumanized since, like, the Crusades. It's been a very long history, going all the way to assassins, which I have a whole lecture on that. But the nature of it, you know, the nature of the dehumanization is finding very real ways to affect people even in the modern day. It's a mistake to do that to any sort of sapient creature. I think actually on your own podcast, back when Dylan was on doing the werewolf episode, they mentioned that like any sort of thinking creature is not one handled well by the Monster Manual. And this is just yet another example, because truth comes to shove. These aren't people, and they should be people. It begs the question, who does this serve? And the answer is really no one. It's the safe option. It's like establishing an iron curtain between these histories and this history. And that curtain never solves any problems. It just delays the problem further or makes people ask questions that you don't have the answers to. If you're setting yourself in the real world, you need to represent real people. And if you feel uncomfortable doing that, you know what? That's a good instinct. Bring on others. It's so easy to bring on someone else. Easier than you think. A lot of people I know are looking for work. And you'll end up with something cool.
One of the things that line in history drives me insane is I'm sure everybody's seen the post online where somebody pointed out, like, if you look at the actual timelines, it would be possible to run a game where a cowboy, a Sherlock Holmes proxy, and a samurai were all in a party together solving a mystery, because they were that's the same time. But we lock off all of the bits of our history and we ignore the ways in which they intersect, and the fact that, like, yeah, we had samurai still in existence in Japan at the same time that, you know, Billy the Kid was doing shit.
We often think of the world as far more isolated than it was, right? The Silk Road existed across two different continents. It was massive. People transported themselves along with everything they owned back and forth. History is a lot more colorful, a lot more diverse culturally and historically than I think all of us give it credit for. And it's really unfortunate that the response to that is to either make us the monsters or sideline us rather than celebrate us. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's just a game. It's just a game. No one's gonna. It's a game. It's a game. You don't have to take it seriously. I know that. But this game is written by real people and inspires real people because people can relate to it. And if you relate to the idea of the vast majority of your history being celebrated and the vast majority of other people's history being sidelined, you're going to carry that on into the real world. Art, as unfortunate as it is, inspires people, and thus you should really be careful of what your art is endeavoring to inspire in your audience. If you're not endeavoring to inspire your audience to do anything, then why are you making art?
Aram, what's going on? Why is all of our stuff in boxes?
Good news, Dylan! Dead Ghost Productions is moving.
What do you mean, moving?
We're separating our patrons and launching a new Dead Ghost page to provide our listeners with more content and a clean RSS feed for all their podcasts. Stacy is helping us out with the heavy stuff. She's a bit clumsy.
Okay, so that makes sense, sort of. What about the people who have already subscribed?
I've got it handled. Everyone who is currently subscribed to our Dead Ghost Productions level or our combined feeds level will get a free month once we split the feeds on June 1st. If you're signed up for a yearly subscription, you'll get just as many free months on our new Dead Ghost feed as you currently have left on that subscription.
Okay, so what do people have to do in order to make the switch?
It's easy. Everyone will get a link to activate their free subscription sent directly to their email. They just need to follow that link to the new Dead Ghost patron and they'll be all set. The changes won't start until June 1st, and if anyone has questions about it, they can email us at killeverymonster@gmail.com or deadghostproductions@gmail.com. They can also message us directly in Patreon.
Okay, this better not interfere with my experiments, Vardian.
Don't worry, Dylan. I've told Stacy to stay clear of your laboratory. How do we safely power down the nuclear generator again?
Aram, what was that?
Good news. I found a dragon.
No, you didn't. Dragons aren't real, Aram.
Oh, they are quite real, Dylan. And very clumsy.
All right, I'll play. Why did you bring a dragon here?
What better way to promote Kill Every Monster than with an actual dragon? We may need to pump up the Patreon just a little.
For $2 a month, supporters on patreon.com/killeverymonster get access to ad-free episodes as they're released. For $5, you'll get them early along with audio DMs notes featuring Aram and I discussing how we made each episode.
For $10 a month, you'll get audio and video DMs notes along with extended cutting room floor content that didn't quite make it into the main episode.
We also have a $25 investor level and a $50 producer level. Support at these tiers ensures we can continue to produce Kill Every Monster and allows us to hire more talent from the community. Both levels get a personalized shout-out at the end of every episode, and producers get a welcome pack of each official Dead Ghost and Kill Every Monster pin we have left in stock.
The $2, $5, and $10 patron tiers are available with a 7-day free trial for new subscribers. So head over to patreon.com/killeverymonster and check out everything we have to offer at no cost to you.
Want another free way to help the show? Give us a review. Written reviews are amazing, but even clicking 5 stars is a huge boost. Podcast reviews are the best way we have to get the show in front of new listeners. You can leave reviews for Kill Every Monster on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Podcast Addict.
Find all the ways you can support the show and leave us a review at patreon.com/killeverymonster.
Mr. Vardian.
Yes, sir.
I want you to tell me a few things. I want you to tell me the name of the character you'll be playing today.
Tanzin.
And I want you to tell me what Tanzin did as the last favor to earn this meeting. What did the Dean want from you before he was willing to set up this meeting?
Who is the Dean, first of all? I don't think you've ever described the Dean.
The Dean is, as he must be, an old elven person. Mostly a man. He's been the Dean for hundreds of years. Specifically works in conjuration. That has been reflected in the way grants have been distributed. And otherwise, pleasant man, well-liked. Everyone talks behind his back about how he has a huge bias.
any wizard needs stuff that an adventurer can get. More specifically, the dean could need anything that a wizard might need, because the divination department is constantly on his ass about how if they aren't funded, the world is going to end because one of their grad students saw something during a lecture.
The main money I make is bringing them spell components, odd spell components, mm-hmm. but also I will occasionally come across an artifact or something significant that I will also bring to the university.
You brought in not even necessarily something particularly magical, just something like the wizards could refine. Let's say the shells, like the remainders of a shell of a hatched dragon egg, the sort of thing that could be cleaned up, sold, and then that would be enough funding, because again, the transmutation people turned the walls of the first floor into jello last week, and there is remodeling that needs to be done. You've been pestering for this meeting for a while, and effectively the dean basically told you there is a new exhibit coming into the museum. The curator can likely point, this is his expertise, they'll probably know where to point you. I can arrange a meeting. It'll be after hours, nice and quiet. They can take you through what they know. And maybe he'll point you in the direction you need to see.
All right.
This is probably a week or two on from you getting back. And the museum has undergone a great deal of remodeling, which can be done very, very quickly because they're friends with wizards. Where Vulgraf pushed Arrasken the way. You are used to this place looking vaguely Greco-Roman on the outside, the huge columns, all of the beautiful stonework, and you walk into the huge open rooms and paintings and artifacts and yada, yada, yada.
My nails clack on the marble floor.
You're walking in there barefoot, weirdo.
Yeah, I'm a dragonborn. How do you get shoes?
You clickety-clack your way in there. Nerdin, tell me, given access to wizards, how did you set up your exhibit?
It's designed to match expectations. Walls painted of this faded burnt orange. Tons of fake sand blocks everywhere. There's sandstone fences on either side. Gems. There's all sorts of ancient scrolls. Long scimitars. And in the back, under the model of an oasis, under two concrete palm trees, surrounded by a moat of very real water, is a small glass case on a pedestal. And that glass case contains what you know, Tenzin, to be a very real genie lamp. Slightly dented, beautifully cleaned. Underneath the glass case, of course, so nothing, not even the elements, can touch it. And leading up to it is a series of stones built into the ground. It is exactly what you think this place should look like.
I'm picturing some light music in the air. I think there'd be like magic mouths next to some of the exhibits, so when I walk up, it'll just talk to me and tell me what's there.
A mortal who desires the brief service of a genie can entreat it with fine gifts, or use flattery to bribe it into compliance.
They speak all in your language, whatever language is your primary language, that's what they speak in.
Impressive.
Powerful wizards are able to forego such niceties. However, if they can summon, bind into service, or imprison a genie using magic.
It's a feature of the museum itself. All the exhibits have something akin to that. What they don't have is fake filtered sunlight through a canopy of silks up above. It's probably one of the most gorgeous exhibits you've ever seen.
It feels pretty transportive, I would imagine. It's obviously done with this tinge towards mysticism and the exotic that doesn't quite hit right, but as far as being a beautiful visual, it's pretty impressive.
It is designed to make you feel exactly how you probably want to feel when you walk into an exhibit such as this one. He's probably the most intriguing, though, is the man who's just standing in the center of it. He's dressed in, like, tweeds and wears shoes that clack upon the ground and is roughly, you know, maybe in his 40s, judging by human years, maybe 50s. A brown-skinned, dark, curly-haired bearded, to be frank, you've met enough people to know, boring looking man.
Mm-hmm.
And he stands out from this decorative scape you see before you. In fact, he seems diminutive as a response.
This is on like the second day of the exhibit.
Is the museum currently open right now?
No, the museum has probably been closed for about like 2-3 hours. We're in that territory of the sun has like gone down, but like it's still just barely light outside.
Yeah.
And the curator is standing there in the middle of this exhibit and just coming, padding out, pulling a little cart behind him, working his night job, is a small kobold pulling this cart. He walks up to the curator.
So it's going to be real hard for me to sleep in here because the floor is, you know, just a bunch of sand, and there's going to be people traipsing in and out. You sure you guys thought this all went through?
I place my hand on the kobold's shoulder. Oh, I'm sure. Don't worry about it. Just make sure that the canopy doesn't collect any dust. That's all.
All right. You're the boss. I am on it.
Everything looks fantastic. Hello. I am Tanzin.
Hello, Tanzin. I'm Snoopy.
Hello, young kobold.
And Snoopy just kind of grabs the cart and just sort of like pulls her off.
I don't say a word, but I do extend my hand.
He shakes it. Good kobold help is hard to find. You must be a very effective manager.
The moment I speak, it doesn't feel like I'm speaking common for like a split second. So you're Tenzin?
Ah, yes, I am. Yes.
You can give me a quick arcana check.
Ooh, I can do that.
Don't give me. Well, obviously, you don't know shit yet.
That is going to... Well, I rolled a 17.
Okay, yeah, you're...
I have been accustomed to talking to people who speak various languages, and using magic to translate isn't so uncommon that I wouldn't pick up on it.
Absolutely fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, he casts tongues.
Yeah.
You can tell that. It's a wonderful thing to meet you. I've not been told much for your visit. We've got everything here from, of course, the land of Zahara to places up north, like Dalewind. Is there anything drawing your eye particularly?
Is there something in here that I brought? So is there something in the museum, some piece that is something I brought previously into the museum?
The most iconic piece that you brought in, one of the things the museum's quite proud of, that doesn't get trotted out too often, frankly, is the shattered remnants of a lich's phylactery. A amulet that was sheared nearly in half.
I go into a 10-minute story about this medallion, about how it was acquired, about the history that I know behind it. I'm a little correct. But like for the most part, I've like got one little nugget of truth and then have greatly exaggerated it for the story. It's pretty evident. If I was talking to anyone who didn't know what they were doing, they would buy it. But you know exactly what I'm doing.
Well, that seems quite impressive indeed.
Why, thank you.
I myself have only collected some baubles and trinkets, as you see here. We don't have much, but what we do have is quite interesting.
This is a beautiful exhibit. You've done quite well curating it.
Some would say I live only to serve. What reason do you have to speak with me?
Well, as one collector to another, I, of course, had some questions about your exhibit here. There's some very fine pieces. But in particular, and his eye and his finger would both lead to the one exhibit, this case under this beam of light, I was wondering about the lamp.
A classic Zaharan oil lamp.
That is such a painfully obvious statement, too. Like, as you've been speaking, he's animated. The head is constantly moving around, like, as he speaks. And you watch Dragonborn, you know, eyes on either side, and you watch on both sides as it just every time catches on the lamp before it kind of continues. Like, he has been watching that thing this entire conversation almost more than he's looked you in the eye.
The classic Zaharan oil lamp. Intriguing. I had no idea you were interested in lighting.
Well, I am, of course, interested in the object for what it can do mundanely, but I have heard stories.
Stories. Tell me what stories you've heard.
magical beings attached to such things. Perhaps trapped within it, just waiting for the right person to come and let them out. And not to brag, but I do believe I'm just one of those people.
Oh, you wish to capture a genie?
Not capture one, of course. No. You must understand me, sir. I would never think to contain such an amazing creature. I simply have questions and perhaps a wish or two. Nothing for me, of course. Nothing so gauche. More of a ways I think I can make things better for all of us.
People have heard of what a genie can do. But stories, well, they change from person to person. After all, they're so rare here. Frankly, I had no idea anything was attached to this thing at all. I just assumed it was a beautiful example of what people assume to be as a genie lamp.
It's more like a puzzle of a story we tell together.
A story that you perhaps know far too well. Intriguing. Well, I suppose I'll have to get the case off the thing, no?
Anything I can do to help? Otherwise, I'll be right here.
I'm quite capable of lifting up a case. Thank you.
Of course.
The oasis has no place for you to walk through, but it does seem to hold my weight. You can see the water ripples, so I look like I'm walking on water, which is nifty. And I twist my hand in front of the magic mouth to shut it up. And I lift off this big glass square from an otherwise very normal looking lamp, a very clean looking lamp. Well then, by all means, do what you need to do.
So accommodating, why, thank you, sir. I will not hesitate. And he gently cups his hands, his blue taloned hands, underneath the lamp and gingerly lifts it off the base.
If you could see the curator's eyes, they're intensely focused on you, and that congenial smile they had is gone.
And he gently starts rubbing it in a circle along the top, like around the front of it, just like right around where the lid would be. And he just closes his eyes, focuses, and thinks about wishing to have wishes.
Nothing happens.
Perhaps I must show a little more respect. And he would place it back down, and he would fold his hands over his body, gently incline his head, and he's going to use ritual magic to cast, I guess, detect magic. Would that be the most sensible thing? Yeah. So he will cast detect magic in a ritual way. He will pluck off one of his blue scales, crush it between his fingers until it's a fine powder, and then just sprinkle it over the top of the lamp.
Once the spell activates, you're getting a little bit of illusion, just like the magic mouth. It's right there. Mostly you're pegging transmutation. It glows, honestly, less intensely than you would anticipate an artifact of this magnitude, but it's certainly just a wee bit magic. Aram, I want you to roll me an arcana check.
That is going to be, again, a 17.
Transmutation checks with some of the stories you've heard. You know, this is a lamp meant to have a genie in it. So, like, transmutation, yeah, you're taking your entire living space and you're making it itty-bitty. Of course, it would be bigger on the inside. Transmutation clocks for you. But again, like, breaking the 15, you're sitting there going, but that's not enough. Like, this is fairly garden variety magic. Like, something is wrong.
But it does also make sense that one might try to conceal these types of magics. And from what I've learned about genies, they are very untrustworthy fellows. So I do believe that this may be simply an illusion of sorts to keep the lessers out, to keep the unwise from gaining such power, which is quite a smart thing to do.
Is this a thing that you're like saying out loud?
Absolutely. Like just, okay. He says everything he thinks out loud. All of these words are being said out loud.
What's your passive perception?
My passive perception is 21. It's not low.
The next words that come from the curator, sound like they're from slightly farther away. You can tell he's taking a couple steps back. And as he says, "Oh, really?" you hear the sound of a sword scraping against a sandstone plinth.
I will turn to see the sound.
He's just fiddling with it in his hands. There's a handkerchief out and he's cleaning it.
Let me just focus for a moment here. I believe I can riddle this out.
Oh, genie, I command thee to show thyself.
You do have an absurdly high passive perception and you have detect magic active.
Mm-hmm.
As you pan over the entire area, you know, obviously you ping each individual detect or magic mouth, bunch of little illusion pings. Curator's got a heavy fucking transmutation. Not like artifact level, but like this isn't alter self. This isn't first year magic class.
If a command will not work, perhaps you should just try saying your wishes aloud, making sure it hears it, you know?
That is an excellent idea. And I would like look at him a little carefully, maybe cock a draconic eyebrow, but no accusations just yet. And he places it down and he considers for a moment. Genie, I wish to know the location of the most powerful artifact nearby that is not in this museum.
Why would you wish to know that?
Then we can go gather the next one. That is my mission, after all, to find all of these lost things that aren't where they should be and place them where they should so that others may see and learn from them instead of just being trapped away in some dusky dungeon.
I suppose quite simply I should say,
I will not be helping you with that.
Did your voice shift in that moment?
It did.
When Tanzin looks at you, have you changed?
No. Not at all.
Interesting. Do you have a connection with the lamp as he slowly puts it down?
Transmutation effect. There's two, actually. Prestidigitation to keep it clean and, well, message so people can contact back and forth.
Oh, so when you speak into the lamp, the message gets carried on.
Not when you speak into it. No.
But when you do...
This is unfortunate. Truly, I thought this position would last a bit longer. But it seems you're here to do something I find rather detestable. And use me for Lord knows what.
I do not seek to use anyone. I seek to learn, to gain, to share knowledge, to share experiences.
You commanded me.
I can see what you're saying. Perhaps I got off on the wrong claw.
You do have feet.
Okay, I know, but it's more fun. Shut up. I see that you have more of a connection to this than I first understood. My apologies for not acknowledging you for what you are. I would very much like to know the location of a powerful artifact nearby, should you wish to share such knowledge with me?
No, I don't think I will. You can leave now.
Excuse me, I just can't leave. There's far too much to be learned now. Clearly, you are more than you say you are. Clearly, this is more than I first assumed. Good sir, you can't just expect me to walk out ignorant.
Fine. I am an Ifriti.
Do you change in that moment, or are you just still the exact same individual?
He's not even budged. He's still cleaning the scimitar. This is so boring. It's like you're one of many people who have probably done this in the past, and only some he's found interesting enough to do anything for.
Walks over and just, like, very gently pokes you.
Can I grab your hand before you even touch me?
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you doing?
I wanted to see if you were an illusion. And as you're grabbing his hand, he's like, and I can see you clearly are not.
No.
Also, transmutation effect.
Yeah, You know it's not.
You know he's not an illusion. You have magic eyes.
Other things could be happening here that I'm not aware of. I'm just to make sure. I found that while magic is helpful in my line of work, it always helps to poke.
You're the equivalent of licking artifacts to determine if they're made of rock or not.
Well, I mean, Dragonborn do have a very experienced and exaggerated sense of taste. So yes, I have done this in the past, but that doesn't relevant here. What's relevant here is that there are important secrets that you are keeping to yourself, sir. And I do not think that is how a man of education should pursue his talents.
So you think I should walk around in my true form and hope that people won't try to use me to find more artifacts or whatever else they have in mind?
No, you cannot trust the average person. But for me, good sir, you can surely show yourself to me.
Do you know what happened to the many people I've granted wishes to? Some, those precious few, are useful to themselves, to others. They're good people. Some are selfish. I've learned not to trust the latter. What do you seek? What do you want? Let's be honest. Glory. And I've seen enough glorious people in my lifetime to know that I cannot trust you with anything.
I am not going to pretend that I don't enjoy my work. I do. But I seek knowledge. And I seek to share that knowledge, and I seek to free that knowledge from tyrants that would keep it to themselves.
Everything in this museum has been stolen from people who would have cared for it better than you. This place is filled with the artifacts of my ancestors, of my ancestors' family, of our friends, our neighbors. Whole towns have died to fill it this place. This place of wonders. And you would call us tyrants for wanting to keep it to ourselves.
Then why even have a museum, sir?
It's quite simple. If somebody comes in asking for the wrong wish, it's a trap.
And the moment I say that, I'm going to shove my hand underneath his elbow and like try to dislocate it.
You let him grapple you.
Right.
He said he grabbed your hand before you could poke him.
That's true.
So this is just, I'm going to give you a straight opposed athletics.
Okay.
Aram, you can do acrobatics to resist. So I guess this is actually functioning like a grapple check.
Good, because I'm speedy but not strong, so that works out well. I have a +9 to acrobatics, and that makes me at 22.
+6 flat, but I've rolled a 16. That also puts me to 22.
Goes to the active party. Aram, this is not hard enough to fully, like, dislocate your arm, because you're moving fast enough to move with it. Nerdane, D4 rounds, is going to have disadvantage if it uses that arm.
Three
rounds.
Yeah.
Which arm do you have?
Which arm did you poke with?
I would have poked with my dominant hand.
Yep.
So I would have poked with my weapon hand. Then as soon as I'm injured, with surprising speed, because I took the feat for this, my shield comes off my back, is in my other arm, and between us as I'm yanking my hand back.
I was hoping this would not be the fight, but here we are.
I did not come here for a fight, good sir, but I assure you, I will end it.
You came here for thievery. For selfishness. Do you honestly believe that you're in the right here?
I believe that powerful things deserve to be explored and found out. And I do not believe, sir, that you are the proper keeper.
I am the powerful thing you seek, and I do not approve being used.
So we're now squared off against each other.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like either of us wants to fight, though. So here's what he would do. Like he's got his shield up. He has a crossbow out now just over it. His finger is like itching on the trigger. You guys are staring at each other. And he just takes a breath, lowers his guard, and looks at you. How about a challenge instead of a fight?
And what challenge would you suggest?
You are the creature who brings up challenges. You are the man of riddles. Why don't you tell me what you think is fair?
That's the problem. It's assumption upon assumption. I am not a creature of riddles. I'm not a creature of tricks. I am just a person. And you have wandered into my museum. Well, you've wandered into my exhibit, trying to use me to help you find more things to put in it. There is no trick here. There's only a trap for people like you to not use more people like me.
Okay, shield comes back up then.
There's a scimitar in his hand, slowly twisting it around.
I do find this unfortunate.
Roll for initiative.
That is going to put me at 18.
I have a plus 7 to initiative, and that puts me at a 19.
You just spot my finger itching towards the trigger, and you get to act first.
While you pull up, you know, your crossbow, while you almost tap upon the trigger, I just go invisible.
I still have detect magic active, right?
Give me a concentration save. We're going to call just DC 10 because you did have...
Because pain was done to me. Yes, fair. 5 plus 7 is 12, so I just made it.
You can see where he is, so this is going to be attacking at disadvantage. It's still invisible target, but you have enough of a bead to be able to make the attack roll.
Okay. I will launch a bolt.
It's a 17 to hit.
I rolled a 16 and a 15, and I have plus 12. 27 would be the lowest one. As soon as you turn invisible, my reflexes are incredibly fast, and I fire a bolt into exactly the area you were just in. 4 plus 5 is 9 points of piercing damage.
All right, 9 points.
I'm actually kind of shocked that I fired. It happened so quickly. When the bolt goes into you, does anything happen?
Yeah, invisibility ends only if I attack or cast a spell.
But I do see an arrow stop in midair, right?
Technically, I suppose I'm wearing it, so it stops in midair and then it vanishes too.
I have the crossbow feat, so I'm going to use up all 3 of my attacks and just unload. The first roll is a 13 and a 15. So 13 plus 12 is 25.
Sure, sure.
And the second roll is an 8 and a 14. So 8 plus 12 is 20.
That'll also hit.
It's very nice a grouping. If I was playing darts, this would be very, very impressive. And you take another 8 plus 5 is 13 plus 3 plus 5 is 8. So 21 points more of piercing damage as 3 bolts just slam right into you.
You don't see anything just yet, but you do notice by like the gait of the wavery sort of invisibility effect in front of you, it barely touches. It's like you are a gnat stinging a giant. I'm going to rush slightly around to try and attack from the side, although I think I'm catching on to the fact that you can tell I'm...
My eyes are tracking with you in general, yeah.
So I stop a bit past... And I'm going to say,
fine then.
You see him like materialize into view. He still looks exactly the same. There's now blood dripping in the front of his jacket as he tosses out a torrid amount of flame directly towards you.
My AC is 18.
One is directly an 18. Ooh, and the second one is a 22.
Those will both hit.
So that's a total of 10d6 fire damage, if you would.
Jesus.
Thank you. He pulls back only for a split second before hurling an underhand amount of flame as well for the same amount, 15 damage both times.
It is intensely focused to the point where you feel it heat your arm through the shield. That's where the burn is.
And I think out of rage, he would throw both arms down, unhinge his jaw, and a bolt of lightning fires out of it. And that is a dexterity save, DC 15.
I have a low dexterity. I only rolled a 13.
24 points of damage.
Aram, is that a line or a cone?
That is a line.
Okay. It's a 30-foot line, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, that rips across a wall. Like, that does active damage. There's maybe, like... couple of smaller vases, nothing particularly like valuable, but still like important. They are pieces. it warranted being in a museum, and it's just the lightning bolt scratches this whole swath across the pedestal, destroys them completely, and the magic mouse clicks on.
Djinn are known for their sense of mischief and their favorable attitude toward mortals.
And you're the better keeper.
Yeah, actually, I think in that moment, even I'd be like, oh, shit. You know, like I didn't mean to do that. Like, I'm actually kind of upset about that too, but I'm more focused on winning this fight.
I extend my hand forward again, and I twist it upwards. Right in front of you, and then surrounding you, is a wall made of flame, leading up to the ceiling. At this point, the silks come down and cascade on top of you in a burned circle as the rest of it falls away. And then I walk through that.
Let's keep it inside here, shall we?
I will square my shoulders, bring my shield and crossbow up, activate second wind, and nod. Yeah, we'll keep it right here.
Aram, I'm going to tell you some stat information. If you're standing adjacent to the wall of fire, you take damage. If it has a 20-foot diameter, that means there is a 10-foot safe space in the middle, and that's the only place you're allowed to stand.
Which I've moved towards quickly, yes.
If you are not in the middle of this circle, it is going to suck seven kinds of ass.
All right, then I would like to not do that. I am not a red dragonborn, I am a blue dragonborn, and I will stay in the center.
I smile and then walk slightly backwards to the flame, so I'm slightly obscured by it. But I keep on walking within that circle. It's about 1 foot thick, so some parts of me extend out of it, some parts of me don't.
So whose turn would it be then?
You just took a bonus action to second wind.
Right. Okay. Then I am going to unload. Three shots. Okay, so the first one is a 14 and a 5. 5 plus 12 is 17.
17 hits my armor class, so I believe it does hit. Meets it, beats it.
That will be an 18 and a natural 1. So the second shot definitely misses. And then I rolled a 14 and a 3. 3 plus 12 is 15. So only one of them hits. And then you kind of like merge into the fire and I just kind of miss you the other. Like I think you're there, but it just passes right through you. So take another 8 plus 5 is 13 points of damage for that one that did hit.
You've hit me a couple times now. None of the arrows survive contact. They hit. I bleed. That's it.
All right. So I'm just hunched behind my shield with my crossbow over it.
I'm going to cast a spell. Major image.
Ooh.
So while I'm behind you, another version of me is going to come out from behind you in the flames.
Aram, you're going to make a wisdom save for that one.
Oh, I'm going to fail that.
The DC is 15, and you have disadvantage because it's walking through the flame. It is inherently obscured.
15 plus 1 is 16, and 11 plus 1 is 12.
You absolutely buy it.
So out of the corner of my eye, I catch a flame version of you stepping out of the fire.
And it does reach out to slash you, but just misses. And then grimaces as it fails to hit you.
I see your little ruse hasn't quite played out the way you expected, and I will shield bash this flame away from me.
Major image is also a concentration effect. Okay, so when you pull that guy out of the fire, that is going to drop the wall of fire because you can't have two concentration effects active.
Ah.
Oh, so it kind of solidifies into the person?
You see the danger of the fire slowly vanish and coalesce into a form that strikes out with flame coming from their scimitar as if they had dragged the wall of fire behind them to try and strike against you.
That's cool. Shame it didn't play out to your favor as I swing my shield.
Okay, make an attack roll.
That is going to be... Oh, that is a natural 20.
You can repeat your wisdom save.
I still at disadvantage.
The firewall's gone, so you can just do it straight.
Then that is a 18 plus 1 is 19.
The shield, it shifts wide to go around you, but you watch as the tip of the sword gets hit by the shield, and it just passes through.
Would I assume that's an illusion, or would I assume he's made of fire?
That is your call.
I'm gonna do a 50-50 on that.
Okay.
I assume he's made of fire. I think that that's completely reasonable. Like, fire is not tangible, and you have shifted into a fire being. So as far as I'm concerned, this is still you.
My goodness.
Just a note to the DMs at home there. If your players decide on their own to just be wrong despite making the checks, that's their problem. You just let them go. You shield bash.
So I swung with my shield. A shield bash, I think, counts as my full action, right?
I don't know the mechanics for a shield bash off the top of my head.
Let's just assume I arrogantly made one attack.
Sure.
So I'm going to slice him with my scimitar from behind twice.
I'm
going
to give you advantage on this because he is fully focused.
There's no facing in D&D.
This is a surprise attack.
Oh.
You don't know he's there.
I don't think he's there. That's fair.
This is not a flanking situation.
No, you're right. That's completely fair.
25 to hit for the first one. And if the second one also has advantage.
Mm-hmm.
21 to hit.
Both those hit.
Yeah, they both do.
Boy, am I glad I took that second wind.
It's going to be 4d6 plus a dozen.
Jesus.
Plus 2d6 fire damage. Or sorry, 4d6 fire damage.
Yeah, 4d6 plus a dozen. Oh, good lord. Now the math is going to confuse me too. Slashing damage, because it is separate. You got lucky. 9 plus 12, which is 21 slashing damage. And now we're going to do the fire damage, which is 11 fire damage. And this comes with a heaping dose of shame as you realize that I'm behind you.
Well, now I'm pissed. The arrogance has fallen away, and now there's just pure dragonborn fury here. I'm going to action surge and fire 4 times.
First off, you're going to fire 6 times because that's how action surge works.
Thank you.
Also, all of them have disadvantage because melee range.
No, I've got the crossbow feat. That's why I can fire every round and reload automatically, and that's also why I am not shooting with disadvantage in melee. First arrow, 17 plus 12, that's a hit. Second arrow, 10 plus 12 is a hit. 6 plus 12 is a hit. 5 plus 12 is a hit. 1 plus 12 is a miss. And 12 plus 12 is 24. That is a hit. And that is going to be 38 points of damage total.
Now he does look very injured. You can tell that you've hit him where it hurts. This being that still looks very ordinary, because I have to dispel it, is almost like clutching over their stomach where you hit them the most and bending over a little bit, but probably still looks better than you.
Neither of us need to die this day.
And what do you plan to do with your life?
That's such a good question. My guy, like, went right back into soldier mode. Shield was up, crossbow over it, firing and advancing with his knees bent, right? Very militaristic at this point. All of the pomp and circumstance around him is gone. But he hesitates for just a moment, and his eyes open because he sees opportunity. And he likes opportunity more than he likes fighting. And he pauses, and he says, "We have had a misunderstanding. I believe we could still be in service to each other if we choose to be."
"I do not wish to be in service to anyone, least of which is you. So answer the actual question. I let you live. What do you do with the rest of your pathetic little life?"
"You let me live, assuming that is within your power, and I will return something to you. Surely there's something missing here that's been taken, and I'm very good at finding things."
"The only things that are left are dust. I will allow you another answer. Ask again."
"Perhaps this then. If all you have left is dust, then there must be some that have caused that dust. There must be those who have taken
and stolen. There must be those who have not repented. I'm sure you'd like to reach out to them.
Let me live. I'll do a murder for you.
I do this not because you've offended me. I do this because the world needs to be protected from you.
I take a step back and I hurl flame twice. Okay, so that first one is a natural 20.
That definitely hits.
And the second one is a dirty 20.
So what do you do?
See, here's the thing. This entire time it's been non-lethal damage, but that's significantly changed now, hasn't it?
Hold on. Aram, how many hit points do you have left?
61.
Okay, so there is a chance that you survive this.
If I don't, just more dust.
I hit you for 60 hit points. So even in this, there's this moment of hesitation as I reach forward and I come closer as I burn you further and further. I think the shield just straight up melts, unless it's magical.
It is, but whatever. Yeah, absolutely it melts.
I put my hand just above your forehead, and with the last bit of life left in you, you see that I'd stop.
He would just collapse. He's just this, like, he's smoking and gasping, unable, like, hard to breathe because the scales on his chest have fused together and are just holding him like in this burnt shell. And he's just gasping and he's on his hands and knees and he looks up at you and he's like, "Mercy.
What do you intend to do with your life?"
"I will put back the things. I will find where they belong. I will find their homes, and I will return them."
"Then I will help you."
And with that, I reach down and I lift you up.
Masters of the air, the Djinn ride powerful whirlwinds that they create and direct on a whim, and which can even carry passengers.
And mechanically, you are now a bit of a warlock with a genie patron. But I reach down and I help you up, and as I do, the magic that is inherently within me coalesces. For a second, you see my true form. You cannot describe it, for I don't look real.
In that moment, in that brief period in between this undescribable thing, it's the most beautiful thing he's ever seen. He's never witnessed such splendor in all the places he's delved and all the treasures he's found. He's never seen anything quite so beautiful, and it just takes him aback, and he nods, and he realizes in this moment that this is more important than the other things he's done. And even in his state and his pain and his brokenness, he sees some of that light, and he doesn't speak because he knows his words would be insignificant. He just nods.
Thank you for joining us for The Genie. For more information about us, notes for each episode, and ways you can help support the show, head over to killeverymonster.com.
If any of the ideas we've discussed on the show have sparked some of your own, tell us about it on Twitter at KEM Podcast. You'll find me at DJ Malenfant and Aram at Aram Vardian.
For ad-free episodes, early releases, bonus episodes, print-ready maps, our new audio DMs notes, and my character sheets for each encounter, head over to patreon.com/deadghostpro.
Our intro theme and many of the sound effects you hear in the show were created by BattleBards. Check them out at battlebards.com.
This episode was produced by Aram Vartian and Dylan Malenfant. I also did the editing. We were joined by Norden Ali Kadir. You can find him on Twitter at @werewolffeels. And if you are anything like me and all of that information just fell right out of your head, you'll find everything you need at killeverymonster.com.
And we'll see you next time
for Kill Every Monster.